Hi, I'm Taylor Smurl.
And I'm Liz Dune.
And this is
Neat.
It's a weekly boozecast.
It's a history lesson with a twist.
It's September.
It is September. I guess it's been September for about a week now, but
it doesn't seem to really feel any different than August.
No, it's still, you know, we did have a couple days that were like kind of a little bit more temperate, a little breezy. Actually, yesterday I felt was a little bit chilly, but it is, nonetheless, it is September.
Yeah.
It's fall, officially, which means one thing. One thing and one thing only.
We are treading slowly to the symbolic death of another year.
Absolutely. And also, it's pumpkin spice latte season.
Okay. So we're going right into it. We're not going to reflect on ourselves.
I mean, we can still reflect. I just want y'all to know early on that this is what this episode's about.
We're going to warn you ahead of time because some people really don't want to talk about pumpkin spice anything, and I get that.
There's, you know,
a bit of fatigue.
Yeah, there's pumpkin spice fatigue. There's pumpkin spice fatigue.
Yeah, that's fair too.
People are tired of being tired of pumpkin spice. They're so tired that they are willing to surrender to the spice.
I'm very for pumpkin spice.
You're pro?
We'll get into why.
Okay.
And I was about to say I'm not basic. I might be. I don't know.
I don't know.
Maybe.
What I don't know. I can't judge anyone.
If it means I get to eat the things I like to eat and drink the things I like to drink, I am super okay with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But okay, so before we get into all that, how was your week? How are you doing? Let's check in.
Yeah, no, I mean, the week's fine. It's usually when I'm working, like the transition from summer to fall is pretty epic because kids come back to school and the restaurants are busy. Like this is usually like the return of clientele. And I realized how much I mark my season by working,
mm-hmm.
by how much I'm getting my ass kicked behind the bar. And I don't have that judgment anymore. So I'm like, I don't know. Do I wear pants outside? Do I wear a hat? Is it summer? I can't tell because there's not a bulk of humanity asking me for vodka sodas to judge the weather by.
It's all a little different. It's all a little overwhelming.
How's your week been?
It's
an okay answer.
I had moments of like overwhelm. I feel like I managed them. I mean, here's the thing that really tipped it off, because last week I usually have like therapy sessions on Friday, and last week my therapist was like, cool, I'm gonna be out of town for 2 weeks. And I was like, yeah, that's fine. Because the last couple weeks I haven't, like, I don't know if it's like I haven't had anything to talk about, or I haven't had anything that I want to talk about, so like our sessions have been pretty mild, and then like just kind of like a check-in. Of course my therapist is out of town, so now I'm going to have a lot of anxiety attacks. It's fine. Everything is fine. You know, I had to have those moments with myself of like, I'm freaking myself out. Just like, take a deep breath. Calm the fuck down. It's fine. I committed myself to too many things yesterday, and I had that kind of moment.
Hmm.
But I worked through it. It's fine. I didn't have to call my therapist while she's out of town.
It's funny. My therapist went on vacation for a week, like, a month ago. And told me that they'd get back in contact with me, like, after they got back. But then I kind of didn't think about it. And then I, you know, they're busy. So she just wrote back to me, like, week before last. And I had, like, oh, shit, I haven't had therapy in, like, 3 weeks.
Wow.
Not that it's like, oh, I've been doing so well. It's like, oh, right, that's a thing. And I've been, now I have to, like, re-enter therapy.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like, don't get out of the mindset. Because then it's, I'm at the place now where I'm like, do I have to go back? I'm like, well, of course I do.
No,
but,
yeah.
But it's, you know, like maybe when you feel that, when you want to call your therapist, maybe like write
an email. Yes.
And then just send it to her when she's back in office. So then
yeah.
You have your thoughts. You have that moment. You've communicated. Because that's what I got out of the habit of allowing anybody inside my hard exterior shell. And I don't know how to do that again. All right. I'm a Capricorn. It's hard.
Yeah, it's hard for Capricorns.
I think maybe I don't need this therapy thing because I have continued to exist for the past 3 weeks. Well, and all of my family and friends are going, nope, you should really reach out again.
Because here's the thing. I think like there is a lot of people who are hesitant to try therapy. It's this stigma, this idea of, well, if I need therapy, that means that I'm crazy. But I saw, and I will admit that I saw an Instagram post that made me think about this, and it posed the question, or like the idea that don't think about it as you need therapy because you have problems. Think about it in the frame of mind that everyone deserves therapy. Yes. Everyone deserves to have somebody who is equipped to process your feelings and help you work through them. Everyone deserves that baseline.
I absolutely agree, but you know.
Yeah, no, totally. I get it.
I don't disagree with you. I think everybody's a better person if they're in therapy, but you know, it's hard. It's hard when you take the break. It's like, I didn't ask for this break. I mean, therapists deserve breaks. They work so hard and they exert themselves in an emotional way that is, I can't imagine. But yeah, you know, there's just that like, well, wait, maybe I'm fine. No, you're not fine. Get back in there.
Yeah, you know, just keep getting back in there. Get back in there, even when it's uncomfortable. Sometimes I have sessions that I'm like, well, I didn't bring anything to talk about because all the things I need to talk about are really uncomfortable. But I guess I'm going to stall and...
Right, like I'm such an overachiever that like if I feel like nothing's bothering me in the minute, I won't make up things that are bothering me, but I'll like make things way worse that really aren't bothering
me. Let's really like dig into that.
Right. Yeah. Like I want to bring you something useful. It's like I don't want to bring you like a pittance of emotional problems. Like, I need to bring you like a good steak of like my trauma and
Well, especially with online therapy, I feel like there was something that I was able to do when I did have therapy face to face, which is I would just like sometimes I would just sit and like be silent for a few moments and we would just like sit together. And it feels like you can't do that on video therapy.
That is hard.
Because it's like, how awkward is it when you're FaceTiming someone and you just don't say anything for like 30 seconds?
I really appreciate, I'm sure we can cut a lot of this out.
But we're good. No, I think this is great. Let's talk about therapy. That's what this podcast is now.
I really appreciate that, like, this is my second therapist. And my first therapist was fine. I'm not going to talk shit on her. She was fine. But the therapist I have now, when I get quiet, she will give me some level of feedback. Because, once again, I have this problem where I want to be good at therapy, which I don't know what that means.
How do you?
Like, I need to bring you some new exciting trauma every week. And I need to be really engaged with my process. And sometimes you do just need to sit quietly and process. And if there's silence, I will feel the need to fill in the blank with, like, words. But I actually like that my therapist, when I, like, run out of things to say or get quiet or think about something, she'll talk back to me.
Okay,
like,
beautiful.
She gives me feedback actively. Like, she fills in the blanks and gives me things to think about, and I don't feel that because lulls in conversation. I just go, I'm going to just keep talking, and then I'm going to land on a resolution that I don't even agree with, but I just kept talking until I got here. And then, like, you know, with my old therapist, she'd be like, oh, interesting. I'd be like, well, I guess that's fact now. That is fact about me forever.
No!
Shit.
Well, all right. So that was our therapy corner. And
therapy is great, y'all.
Therapy is great. We're pro therapy, 100%. Some people's therapy is spicy fall themed lattes.
I mean,
sometimes that's what does it for you.
If that's what works for you. Yeah. So we're talking about all things pumpkin today. We're going to give you some information about pumpkin spirits, pumpkin beer, and the long and storied history of pumpkin spice in general. So if you're a pumpkin fan, this is an episode for you. If you're a pumpkin non-believer, if you're one of those people that, like, you know, feels better than other people for enjoying pumpkin things, maybe this episode's for you too. Because pumpkin has a long history, especially if you're an American.
Oh, for sure.
And we say, like, as American and as apple pie, Apple pie, not American.
Not fucking American.
Pumpkin pie.
Super American. So let's super get into it. North American.
North, yes.
Yes.
United States of America.
Yeah. Before. Much, much, much before. Mm-hmm. I feel like we really just need to address the elephant in the room first. Let's talk about the pumpkin spice latte.
The elephant wearing Uggs in the room. That's cute. I like that.
Elephant. I like an elephant wearing Uggs. What if it had a beanie?
A little beanie. It's definitely wearing a beanie.
Yeah. I like him. So where does pumpkin spice come from? The spice that makes up the pumpkin spice. And when we say that, a lot of us understand that there is no actual pumpkin in pumpkin spice, right?
And even the spices that we associate with pumpkin spice, I mean, there's a little bit of variance there, right? Like, I think we should, just to clarify what pumpkin spice is now.
Mm-hmm. So when we talk about pumpkin spice, we're usually talking about a combination of cinnamon, cloves, ginger, nutmeg, and sometimes allspice.
Right.
So those are the integral ingredients that create the flavor we know as pumpkin spice. This is the mix that we think of when we flavor pumpkin pie or a lot of pumpkin flavored things. Hmm. And I want to start with nutmeg. And actually, I just want to talk about nutmeg.
I like that you just decided, you know what I'm going to talk about? Nutmeg.
You know, because, okay, I know that cinnamon is a huge ingredient in this, yes. But nutmeg is kind of the extra spice that I think brings nutmeg and ginger, really. Ginger is really useful in a lot of ways, but nutmeg is kind of like the wild ingredient in this that brings that kind of nuanced something. It's like, so it's, nutmeg is like a very strange and wonderful flavor, I believe.
And it's also, it can kill you in high enough concentrations.
Yes, so it can.
I like any flavor that can be delicious in one concentration and kill
you
me
know,
in another.
A lot of people at one point were experimenting with nutmeg as a drug.
Oh.
And I will say, as a precursor to all of this, do not use nutmeg to get high, because although it is a hallucinogenic drug in high doses, the side effects are fucking nasty and include gastrointestinal reactions and heart and nerve problems. Think diarrhea and seizures. Like, really bad stuff. It can kill you. It can kill you.
Okay, so...
So don't use nutmeg as a drug. You don't need that. So nutmeg has been used by humans for around 3,500 years. They found remnants of nutmeg in clay pots from around that time. Humans have probably been very enthusiastic about it for almost that long. Fun fact, the Dutch were so crazy about nutmeg that they traded New York, formerly New Amsterdam.
Us.
Yeah. They traded New York for the region that is now Indonesia. Because Indonesia is rich in nutmeg.
We were traded for nutmeg.
Mm-hmm. In short, Europeans love nutmeg. So when did the spice combo first appear? It's not really a surprise. Pumpkin pie. The creation of pumpkin pie was when we were like, yes, these things, we like these as baking spices. We want to put them in this. In 1796, in a cookbook called American Cookery by Amelia Simmons, she made a recipe for pumpkin pudding in a pie crust, and it was flavored with molasses, ginger, nutmeg, and allspice. In 1936, the Washington Post printed a recipe for pumpkin spice cakes. So that's, I guess, maybe the first time you hear pumpkin spice put together. Okay. They're like, these are things that we know are like used to flavor pumpkin pie. So we're just going to take those spices and these are pumpkin spice cakes. Then, you know, branding happened. It's the 50s. It's the 1950s. And companies like McCormick, major spice company, start selling spice mixes / blends. You know, for folks that didn't want to do it themselves. And one such was pumpkin pie spice. So McCormick, among other spice companies, were the ones who, like, put these together. And that's how we get pumpkin pie spice. And that made it really easy to flavor other things with this spice, like sweet potato and a plethora of other things. If you have a spice mix that's just, it's pumpkin pie spice, you can put it on anything, really.
Well, and that's one of the general confusions about pumpkin spice, is that it's literally just referring to spices that pair well with pumpkin.
Yes.
There's no pumpkin involved. Just as much as, like, there's apple pie spice that McCormick also makes. A lot of brands make it. But, you know, it's kind of similar. It has a few other ingredients in it. But the idea is this just goes well with apple. It doesn't necessitate apple any more than pumpkin spice necessitates pumpkin. But exactly. That does lead to a lot of confusion, I feel like.
Absolutely. So in 1996, a roaster in Tampa, Florida called Home Roast Coffee may have been the first to brew pumpkin spice coffee. But it wasn't until the early 2000s that someone came up with the PSL. PSL. In January 2002, Purple Mountain Coffee in Colorado came out with a pumpkin pie latte. That is pumpkin pie latte. But it appears Starbucks may have been the company to actually coin pumpkin spice latte in 2003. After they took it nationwide in 2004, their sales rose 11%, which I am assuming, because I am not a marketing guru, that's a lot.
Seems like a lot.
Yeah, so that's where we get these pumpkin spice lattes. And it seems that the PSL, it has a lot to do with marketing, because a lot of people were using these pumpkin pie spices in stuff before it was just shortened to pumpkin spice everything. Right. So, you know, although pumpkin spice contains no actual pumpkin, there are a lot of things that do. And I think we have to go back a little bit.
Yes. So I'm going to tell the parallel history. That's, you know, pumpkin spice and pumpkin. I'm going to talk about pumpkin beer. Pumpkin spice and pumpkin beer kind of come up along divergent but similar timelines. Pumpkin beer, it's not a new craze. It's not a product of the craft beer movement. It is born alongside the roots of what we know is our current nation. Pumpkin beer is as old as America. Actually older.
So you're saying pumpkin beer is as American as apple pie?
It's more American than apple pie.
More American. Okay.
Shortly after the pilgrims first arrived on American soil, they set about learning how to work with the flora and fauna they found there to try to recreate the things they knew from their homeland. Now, when it came to beer, they lacked a lot of the familiar elements of brewing. They didn't have access to hops, to barley, to malt. Now, that's where we introduce the pumpkin, which was probably brought to them first by Native Americans.
Absolutely.
Native Americans were already cultivating pumpkins. It was already like a crop that they regularly grew.
They were like, here, you poor European people, you don't know anything. Here's a pumpkin. It can do a lot of things.
Exactly. And I mean, the pumpkin, and it did. It filled in the blanks for a lot of things. It was cultivated for its versatility and its fortitude. A pumpkin could last all winter long.
Yeah.
So that's why anything involving pumpkin, like the Europeans did not know about pumpkin. There's no history of pumpkin in the European world.
They had no idea.
No. But soon enough, it was the rage among all of the settlers. It is actually referenced in what's considered the first American folk song.
Oh!
Yeah, that comes to us from 1643. The lyrics include, like, instead of potage and puddings and custards and pies, our pumpkins and parsnips are common supplies. We have pumpkin at morning and pumpkin at noon. If it was not for pumpkins, we should be undone.
Hey down, dairy down.
Yes. Pumpkin took the place of a lot of things for them. Actually, this is around this time, like late 1600s. There's actually what I would call, it's not the pumpkin spice latte because there's no coffee involved.
No.
But they actually would boil pumpkins. They would hollow up pumpkins and then fill them with milk, honey, and spices and like cook them that way to make like a sweet, warm. Yeah. So early pumpkin spice lattes, in my mind, that's
like the pumpkin. I mean, it's the pumpkin spice latte without the coffee, which is basically a pumpkin spice latte. So
exactly. So they made, you know, they were figuring it out. This is sort of a funny thing that I came across in my research was that, like, one of the big selling points of pumpkin was that even the hyper-religious Puritans could enjoy pumpkin, because a big part of Puritan culture was sort of divesting yourself of the Roman Catholic, you know, indulgence.
Okay. Are you saying because pumpkins were so bland?
Pumpkins were just like, there were all of these, you know, kind of feast-related foods of the old world that they were not going to have anything to do with, and they would shun away.
Oh, no, don't give me any of that rich food. I'll just have a humble squash.
Well, and that's what I was fascinated, because there was an article that I read that kind of just offhand said, like, yes, because, you know, mince meat pies were viewed as, like, decadent and evil, that they could have pumpkin pie instead. I'm like, wait, I need to know about decadent and evil mince meat pie. I need to know about that. So I looked a little bit more. I went down a weird mincemeat rabbit hole about why mincemeat pie was evil and pumpkin pie was good.
Yeah, I read that too, that they were like called like blue laws.
Yeah.
And they said that like minced pies were anti-Christian.
Please. Let me give you a quote.
Tell me.
It comes from a pamphlet entitled Christmas In and Out. It comes from 1652, that's talking about what is okay and is not okay to eat as a good Puritan around Christmas. And it says, from the 24th of December at night till the 7th of January following, plum pottage was mere popery, that a color of brawn was an abomination, that roast beef was anti-Christian, that mince pies were reliquies of the whores of Babylon.
Oh my God.
And a goose, a turkey, or a capon were marks of the beast.
Oh my God. The Puritans just don't sound like any fucking fun at all.
I really just want to make a Whore of Babylon mincemeat pie now.
Yes. You don't even eat meat.
Mincemeat used to include meat. Nowadays, it's just nuts and
food. Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, you could definitely make that then.
You can use it. You can make vegan mincemeat. But yeah, so it was a good alternative for lots of reasons. It filled a lot of voids, pumpkin did, and it also wasn't a product of Satan, I guess.
Okay, cool.
But there's some argument. It is like, it wasn't like how many people took it seriously, this sort of, you know, like association with decadence of a lot of common foods. But in any case, they didn't have them. So
yeah,
they
no.
could really feel pious eating their pumpkin pies. pumpkin pious.
Pumpkin pious.
All right. So, but specifically when it came to pumpkin beer, I'm so sorry. I'm sorry. I am sorry, and I'm the one that should be sorry.
I'm still in pumpkin pious. I'm sorry.
I didn't think about that before I released it.
Wow.
End of the world. All right. So as much as they were replacing so many things with pumpkin, similarly, their base for brewing beer would be pumpkin. Now, the earliest pumpkin beers were fermented from the sugars that actual pumpkin yields. They didn't have malt, they didn't have barley, they didn't have any other traditional forms of ale making, so they used pumpkin in place. And this would have, you know, just been a very simple, pared down product at the end. It would have been a very like pumpkin forward, slightly alcoholic, slightly effervescent outcome. And you know, like it was touted as talking about the Puritans, you know, like being like, oh well, why would they make beer, why would they make alcohol? But like at this point we didn't really understand how alcohol worked, so it like, you know, it wasn't viewed as something that was inebriating. It was viewed as something that was healthy and good for you.
Especially beer, because it was such low alcohol.
Yeah, we didn't fully understand how to drive up alcohol at the time. So the pumpkin beer they were drinking was probably very low alcohol and probably pretty plain.
Very Puritan.
Yes, very Puritan pumpkin.
Very pumpkin pious.
Yes. Oh. There's a recipe that gets, I just found this like consistent point of misinformation, that there's a recipe that's credited as the original pumpkin beer that came in like 1771. And that one definitely got replicated a lot, but there's evidence long before that pumpkin beer existed.
Yeah.
So, you know, it probably arrived around the same time the settlers did. In any case, as popular as pumpkin was in everything, with the arrival of the Industrial Revolution in the late 1700s, early 1800s, pumpkin beer began to fall out of flavor as malt was readily available and grain cultivation prospered. This was also aided by the arrival of German settlers who brought with them beer brewing knowledge, tech, a palette that frankly would become the American standard. The American palette pre-German intervention was very different than post, which was very that bright, weedy Pilsner flavor that we now associate with American beer. We get from the German palate. You know, with a multitude of beer styles propagating in the 1800s, there was a kind of moment of a revival of pumpkin beer in the, like around 1840. And this is the first time we see pumpkin become an ingredient, like a flavoring element versus like the main fermenting sugar. So sort of just in reverence of the old pumpkin beer, people made like a pumpkin flavored beer.
Okay.
I think this is kind of funny because now like when we do throwback styles, we think it's going to be thrown back like distant. But this is like somebody in the 1840s being like, oh, we're just going to pay homage to like,
used to make beer with pumpkin. Yeah, so.
Which I mean, granted,
we'll put some pumpkin in our beer.
Like still like 100 years after they, you know, it was popular. So I guess it is on the same time frame. But it seems kind of funny that there was like a resurgence of a fad. I guess
history repeating.
It just shows you that we're just ready for pumpkin to come back in.
We're always ready for pumpkin to come back.
Do you think the people in 1840s that got really into pumpkin beer? In that resurgence were like called basic then, maybe?
Maybe there was like pumpkin beer fatigue.
I mean, it must have lasted for a while if there was, because there wasn't another revival of pumpkin beer until 1986.
Oh, shoot.
So the year I was born, I am exactly as old as the revival of pumpkin beer.
Wow, what an accomplishment.
I hope that's not the most interesting thing about me. I don't know that.
But I don't think that works.
Maybe it works.
It needs work.
Workshop that.
I'm workshopping it.
So Buffalo Bill's Brewery in California, they began brewing a pumpkin ale in 1986. Now, their first test batch did include pumpkin, and it was based on a recipe recorded by none other than George Washington. This is interesting because when we talk about pumpkin beer and like some modern pumpkin beers on the market, this one dates back to George Washington's recipe. There's another one by Thomas Jefferson that also, he had a recipe for pumpkin beer that he liked. It was more sour, and he called it pumpkin. That was his thing. So, you know, it's interesting because when we're talking about alcohol, like Jefferson and Washington come up a lot. Like they had recipes for milk punch, for brandy, for applejack.
It's almost like they had so much time because they weren't concerned about the well-being of other people that they could just come up with recipes for alcohol.
It does seem like they definitely had a lot of time spent developing recipes. They had that in common.
It's funny.
Yeah. But I'm anyway, just saying it's funny. Buffalo Bill's Brewery in California, they produced their pumpkin ale in 86. The one that they put on the broad market actually did not contain pumpkin. It was just pumpkin pie spice.
They're like, we tried the pumpkin. It wasn't great, so we just put the pumpkin pie spices in. Exactly. We didn't put the pumpkin in.
And that's kind of the style that caught on through the 90s. Because when you see like the birth of the craft beer movement in the 90s and up to the 2000s, you really see pumpkin beer become like the thing in like the late 90s, early 2000s. You know, and I mean, a lot of the breweries go back to pumpkin beers that include pumpkin in the fermentation process, like Dogfish Head pumpkin beer, Sam Adams pumpkin, Post Road pumpkin from the Brooklyn Brewery. Buffalo Bill's eventually remade or made a second offering of pumpkin that's their stout that uses real pumpkin. So we didn't completely lose that original arc of brewing with pumpkin.
Because now, like, modern beer, like, pumpkin beer brewers agree that, like, if you're going to call it pumpkin ale or pumpkin beer, you have to have some pumpkin in there, which is kind of hard. You've got to try. You've got to, like, put some pumpkin in there. So it's tricky because when the starches break down during fermentation, you lose a lot of the pumpkin flavor. Southern Tier Brewing Company, which makes pumpkin, uses 8,000 or more pounds of pumpkin puree annually for its nearly 20,000 barrels of pumpkin, and even as abundantly as pumpkins grow. that can be challenging, sourcing mm-hmm. those pumpkins. And in order to meet those demands, a lot of those companies that produce pumpkin beer have to start brewing and shipping in July just to like get ahead of that shit. But there are a lot of beers out there that are just using pumpkin pie spices.
Right.
But there's a lot more nowadays that actually use pumpkin pulp in their brewing, in their mash, although it's always like a hint of pumpkin. Put it in the mash. What do you want?
I mean, that's the thing. Like, as far as like what sells, I feel like people that buy pumpkin beer typically want it to, they don't want mm-hmm. a high vegetal pumpkin flavor. They want pumpkin spice. Like, mm-hmm. I think that it's interesting because then you can do a pumpkin beer without pumpkin and get away with it. I don't think you can do a pumpkin beer without spice and get away with
yep.
it. Because that's the thing. Like, if anybody's ever had, like, lightly roasted pumpkin, it doesn't
taste like much.
No, like, it has kind of a nuttiness. It has a little bit of residual sweetness. It definitely has a very full flavor, but it doesn't have a ton to offer. So, you know, when we get into the arguments of like, well, pumpkin beer should have pumpkin in it, it's like, what we're talking about is pumpkin spice beer, and what you're talking about is basically a mulled beer,
mm-hmm.
which there's a history of that. I definitely prefer beers that have some pumpkin element in them, some actual pumpkin, because I think vegetal balances out the spices really nicely.
Yeah.
I do think it's kind of like the also, I mean, like you said, the elephant in the room is that what we want is the spice.
Yeah.
That's the part that we like.
Because I was interested, like, when I kind of went through a lot of the popular ones, and I'm interested in, like, Allagash Ghoulship uses pumpkin molasses, raw pumpkin seed, and that's it. Like, they don't have the baking spices in there, so, like, what does that taste like? Do you get the pumpkin? There's another one, Rogue Pumpkin Patch Ale is pumpkin beer with orange peel and vanilla instead mm-hmm. of the baking spices. If you don't have the baking spices, are you going to taste the pumpkin more, or are the baking spices kind of bringing out that pumpkin taste?
I mean, that's the thing. Like, especially when we're talking about like pumpkin pie spice, it is so heavy on the cinnamon. If you look at any recipe for like pumpkin pie spice, the proportion of cinnamon to all the other ingredients is so high. And mm-hmm. I love cinnamon. I love cinnamon in everything.
Cinnamon's great.
But a lot of times what you're getting with a pumpkin beer is a cinnamon forward beer that has mm-hmm. some other elements backing it up. So I don't know. I mean, I agree. Like, I prefer pumpkin beers that don't focus as much on the spices, but I also don't fault those that do, because
yeah.
I think that's what people are looking for.
It's so hard. Like, I know there's I don't remember who does it, but there's somebody that uses raw pumpkin in like one of the later processes, not in the mash, to try to get that more like vegetal quality. But it's so, because it's a starch, it's so hard to get a flavor
right
from the pumpkin.
Well, have you ever cooked pumpkin, like, and just yeah. eaten pumpkin? Like, there's not a lot of flavor.
Right.
When we're talking about pumpkin spirits, of course, pumpkin beer is really just the tip of the iceberg.
Oh,
the explosion
absolutely.
Of the love of pumpkin spice. You get into all of the bevy of pumpkin liqueurs and spirits, infusions.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about some of those, because I think they still fall into that same divide between, are we talking about a spice build that we agree we all like, or just like a vegetal infusion?
Yeah, well, liqueurs seem to be the first ones in the alcohol, like in the spirits realm, to jump on the pumpkin spice trend, or just the pumpkin trend, because Pennsylvania Dutch pumpkin cream liqueur shows up around 2006, and it's only made with dairy cream and pumpkin flavor. And from the reviews that I've read, it actually just kind of tastes like pumpkin squash. Like, it, like somebody said, like, oh, it tastes like a little bit more like pumpkin rind than pumpkin, but like, they're probably thinking of pumpkin spice. They're probably thinking like it should taste like pumpkin pie.
Does it have sugar in it?
I assume it's a liqueur, so I assume it has sugar in
okay,
it.
So
but
it's like just sugar pumpkin.
Yeah. Yeah. It just like, it's, you know, it's basically the squash, some cream, some sugar. I assume they were trying to keep it like a little pure, like this is pumpkin. It's pumpkin. But then the pumpkin spice shows up with Hiram Walker, makes a pumpkin spice liqueur in 2007 that has vanilla, graham cracker notes, and pumpkin pie And like their previous gingerbread line, it pairs well with a range of spirits to create unique and festive holiday cocktails.
Well, and I mean, that's like Bowles also has one that is pumpkin spice. Hiram Walker and Bowles are kind of like, I trust those brands to mm-hmm. bring me a overly sweet and kind of commercial ingredient, but not complete garbage.
Yeah.
And like that's, but we're still talking about things that are relying on the spice.
Yeah. I mean, and this is like, that includes like Mozart has a chocolate pumpkin spice liqueur. Kahlua, obviously, they had to get in on that. They have a pumpkin spice coffee liqueur, which only makes sense.
Yeah.
Bailey's has a pumpkin spice cream liqueur. Actually, Trader Joe's now has a pumpkin spice cream liqueur, too. None of these are specifically like, we're pumpkin. It's all about the spice.
Well, they're pumpkin spice. And the thing is like, I don't think anyone would not buy a liqueur that is cinnamon, ginger, nutmeg, and it's cloves. That's a good spice build.
It's a great combo.
It's a very good spice build. So, you know, does it work in a cocktail? Absolutely. It's a great modifier. The pumpkin thing is always the thing that it gets wrapped in. And most of these do not include pumpkin. Now, one that I do think, after the pumpkin liqueurs, we get into like the pumpkin vodkas.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of the same thing. There's like Pinnacle, which is the one you see everywhere.
Yeah.
And that arguably pumpkin is like what they had, like pumpkin pie.
Yeah, they had like, first they released, in 2012, they released pumpkin pie. Which is, like, it's just a little bit different than what they have now. They did include the taste of pumpkin with the spicy flavor of cinnamon and nutmeg and topped with a delectable dollop of whipped cream. That was, like, their flavor profile.
Wait, it tastes like whipped cream?
Pinnacle also makes a whipped cream vodka, what? So I assume that they can make it taste like whipped cream. But that's what the profile of their pumpkin pie vodka was, but okay. Then they came out later in 2018, they came out with pumpkin spice Pinnacle. That's a little bit different. They're just like, we've got nutmeg, ginger, cinnamon, butterscotch, vanilla cream. Those are the flavors we're highlighting here.
Just candy.
Yeah. Yes. Absolutely. You know, spicy candy.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't, like, if you're into pumpkin spice vodka, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I was surprised to see this existed, but Crop makes a pumpkin spice vodka.
They make a spiced pumpkin. How they...
Okay, sorry. Spiced pumpkin. Crop I've worked with. I've worked with Crop before. It's pretty well made. Like, it's very respectably. It's all organic. They don't use, like, artificial flavors. So I was surprised to see that they made a pumpkin spice vodka.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's also, like, I think... One thing that I like about the Crop one is that it's not clear. If you're infusing something with something like pumpkin, you're going to get some color off of it.
Oh, so there's actually pumpkin in there.
Yeah, they use like roasted pumpkin and spices. And so I haven't tried the Crop pumpkin spice vodka. But if I was going to try an pumpkin spice vodka, I would definitely go with the Crop one because it's made with what's in it is what's on the label and nothing crazy. Because you can infuse vodka with anything and make absolutely. A product that's respectable. I don't always trust the Pinnacle people.
Yeah, no.
If you have added whipped cream flavor to something and it's clear, I'm just like, what is that?
But what does whipped cream... Whipped cream is just...
You just...
Sugar.
That's just manufactured in a lab.
You know how I feel about flavored vodkas. So...
Well, I mean, a lot of the...
But like, I'm more likely to be... Like a Crop... Like Crop feels like... Sure. Okay.
Well, flavored vodka is gin, really. Gin is flavored vodka.
Sure.
So if you
flavor... But chemically flavored vodka.
Yes, chemically flavored. Well, I mean, by the same token, I love rum, but one of these products that comes up is... Jacko Blast Pumpkin Spiced Rum.
By Captain Morgan.
Yeah, so Captain Morgan makes a pumpkin spiced rum. Just stay away from that. That's definitely artificially flavored. You would be better off buying like a Monin pumpkin spice syrup.
And then just
putting
like,
it in some good
with
rum.
With some rum, yeah.
Like good rum.
Yeah,
not even expensive absolutely. Rum. Same price as you'd pay, if not less. Mm-hmm. But just don't. When there's those, like, artificially infused spice blends, I don't trust it.
I mean, at least, like, Old Smoky Moonshine makes a pumpkin pie moonshine, which just seems like, I mean, it's moonshine with pumpkin pie spices. I feel like that's just going to be, you know, it's basically moonshine. it's a little spicy moonshine. So like, sure, whatever you're getting there is fine.
Well, there's actually,
because if you like moonshine, sure.
Actually, that's in that same category. Corsair Distillery, it's in Nashville, Tennessee. They have something, they have a pumpkin spice moonshine, and it is pumpkin and malted barley moonshine. So they actually have pumpkin in the fermentation process. Oh,
that's even better.
And then they infuse it with pie spices.
I love that.
As of right now, I think that's only available like in Nashville and like immediately surrounded areas. But this gets into another category, though, I think, of pumpkin liquors, which is products that are just using pumpkin as an element, mm-hmm. And still trying to keep kind of a respectable product versus just dessert. And I think that's really exemplified by the range of pumpkin whiskeys that just this year. They've been coming out over the last couple years, but like one of the pumpkin beers we did not mention, but I think so many people know, is Pumpkin from mm-hmm. Southern Tier. It was a real game changer when it entered the market in 2007. It was like very balanced. It had a nice like kind of bitterness to it. It was an imperial ale. It had like 9% alcohol, or like 8.6. Pumpkin really took over as like that pumpkin pie in a glass taste.
And they did make it with real pumpkin.
Yeah, it's made with pumpkin, but it also just has, it has kind of everything you're looking for in like just an intense pumpkin beer. I think it's aptly named. And it was my favorite for a while. I will say the only beer that supplanted it in terms of pumpkin beers for me is the Southern Tier Warlock.
Oh yeah, you love that one.
It's the same beer, it's just, it's a stout instead of an IPA. It's mm-hmm. really good. But this year, 2020, garbage year, but at least Southern Tier Distillery partnered with Southern Tier Brewery, you know, their family, they have released a pumpkin whiskey. Mm-hmm. Which it's not actually distilled from Southern Tier Pumpkin. You can do that. You can distill whiskey from a beer, but this is just more inspired by. So it's a whiskey that's infused with the flavors of pumpkin.
Cool. In the same vein, Great Lakes Distillery makes a seasonal pumpkin spirit. And that one actually, I believe, is distilled from their pumpkin lager.
Right.
Yes.
That's the recipe from Thomas Jefferson.
Oh, yeah. But there's other things out there. There's pumpkin wine. There's a lot of pumpkin wines to choose from, but a quick internet search suggests it's pretty easy to make your own pumpkin wine or pumpkin champagne.
Oh.
All you need is pumpkin, water, sugar, citric acid, and wine yeast.
Okay, so you're just, okay. You are fermenting there, so, you know, be careful.
Be careful.
There's one that I do, I just thought this process sounded really smart to me. Sons of Liberty, who's located in Rhode Island, makes a pumpkin. I guess they're calling it a whiskey, but I think this is cool. They take their overproof, like barrel strength whiskey, and instead of proofing it down with water, which is customary, they proof it down with pressed pumpkin juice.
Oh.
So they roast pumpkins and press out the juice and then use that to cut their whiskey down to proof.
Oh, that's cool.
And then they add spices. But I think that, to me, that idea, like you're making up so much of your volume with fresh pumpkin juice, that's got to have such a different flavor than if your pumpkin's getting tossed out in your mash or if it's just an infusion.
Oh, yeah. I'm really interested to try that.
Like, it's not like, yes, pumpkin liqueurs, pumpkin vodka. We can all go like, that's silly. But I think the pumpkin whiskey and like the distilled spirits, yeah. I think there's a lot to offer there.
I think so, too. I think that's a great idea. Well, that's not where it ends, folks. Because now, in 2020... there is finally possibly a product of our trauma for this year and our combined love of pumpkin spice lattes and hard seltzer. There is a pumpkin spice hard seltzer. And I will just read the article that I found about this that pretty much sums it up, entitled "Pumpkin Spice Hard Seltzer Exists Because 2020 Isn't Done With Us Yet."
So that's from Food and Wine.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to find this because I want to try it. Of course I want to try it. The thing about this Vive pumpkin spiced seltzer is it's only available in 3 states.
Which states?
Ohio, Tennessee, and Kentucky.
Oh.
And only at Kroger's. So if you have access to Kroger's, that's the first thing I did was text my sister and brother-in-law and be like, so here's what I need to do. And I don't like that. That is a funny kind of focus group, I think. Like, I do think like before we sign off here, I do kind of want to have a moment to think about. We laugh at the pumpkin spice seltzer. We roll our eyes at the pumpkin spice vodka. We think it's silly, you know, the pumpkin spice latte. Oh, it's basic. One thing that I found and like kept coming up in my research was like all these lists of people saying like, oh, the most ridiculous things that are pumpkin spice that have ever been made, you know, 36 things that shouldn't have been made. And like, they're not like, these articles are on like BuzzFeed and Eater and like the list, like, you know, decent websites that and do good reporting. And some
things that, yeah, no, like sure. They shouldn't make pumpkin spice Spam.
That's probably a weird not. One. Sure. Like I, you know, pumpkin spice Pringles. I'm like, no, I don't know.
Probably not. No,
there was like a pumpkin spice burger from Umami Burger that made the list that had it had like a kabocha croquette, which I'm kind of on board for. I'm like, okay, that's fine. But then they had like a, you know, like a maple mayonnaise and some glaze.
I'm sorry, no.
No, it
was like, no thank you.
Like
no,
pumpkin spice latte burger. That's what it was.
Oh, I was gross. Very against it. That's terrible.
Yeah, so I'm for like the extremes. I think it's a little silly. But, you know, most of the stuff that's like pumpkin spice, like Oreos or like Twinkies or candy corn.
Like, who is arguing for bland ass Twinkies? Like, why wouldn't you put spice in that shit? Like, it's good. They're baking spices.
And if you're like, no, I don't want like artificial ingredients in my Twinkie, it's like, hello. You're what eating did you a think? Twinkie.
What did you think your Twinkie was made of?
So I really like, you know, this love of pumpkin spice and then this backlash of hating pumpkin spice because I don't know, that's what we do. It's like, oh, it's cool, everybody likes it, now I hate it. Because I remember when pumpkin beer was cool.
Yeah.
I remember like in my college years, like early 2000s, and it was like a very cool thing to know about pumpkin beer and to have those reference points. And now it's like very like, oh, you're basic, you like pumpkin beer.
Pumpkin beer is good though. It's good.
If you enjoy it, if it's something you enjoy, and especially if it's something that is, I'm sorry, but cinnamon, ginger, nutmeg, clove, like with or without the pumpkin, if you think you're gonna be like, oh, it's not real pumpkin, you're like, you're right. It's just a bunch of spices that work really well together and flavor things and show up in culinary history and cocktail history paired together consistently. Throughout time.
It's like the pumpkin part of pumpkin spice is the marketing ploy. Right. Like, it doesn't actually, for it to be good and contain these really beautiful spices that not only are pair really well with sweet things and other spicy things and bring out a lot of flavor in vegetable things, these spices are just good on their own, but nobody would buy them in today's market, been like, this is a spicy thing. Like, this is baking spices latte.
Fall spice, yeah.
Fall spice beer.
That
no.
just sounds like a weird knockoff of pumpkin right. spice. Like, pumpkin spice gets it somehow copyrighted, and so now it's right. fall time orange spice. The only reason I want to make this point is because the love affair with it is maybe overrated. I think the hatred it gets is absolutely overdone.
Yeah.
If you like it, of course you should. It's a bunch of delicious spices sweetened and paired with a vegetable profile that works really well for it.
Yep.
There's no problem with loving it. There's no problem with enjoying it this time of year. There is so little joy to have in 2020.
Honey, in 2020, if you like it, you can have it, okay? Just have it.
We're gonna give you a pumpkin spice syrup recipe. You can put it in your coffee every day.
Absolutely.
It's cheap. It's easy. You don't need to go to Starbucks and get a pumpkin spice latte.
Don't waste your money.
No, you can make it at home. And frankly, pumpkin spice is cheap.
It's cheap. Oh, for sure. For sure.
You can make delicious things with pumpkin pie flavoring so cheaply. So like it, hate it. That's fine, but don't build your identity around hating pumpkin spice lattes or loving it, really.
Yeah, I agree.
Is that fair?
End of transmission. Yes, that's it. I may have in the past disliked pumpkin spice things because of the craziness around them, but at the end of the day, it's just cinnamon, nutmeg, cloves, ginger, sometimes allspice. And those are really great flavors together. So put them in my stuff if it makes sense. You know, that's how I feel. I love it.
There you go. Have some pumpkin beer. have a pumpkin Twinkie. I don't even know if they're still available.
Oh, please. They better be. They have to come out with pumpkin spice everything this year.
I mean, I guess that's just what we're all going to cling to just to get through it. Just
John Oliver always does like a thing about pumpkin spice. And this year, the news segments that they included in this pumpkin spice segment, the anchor just seemed so defeated, like, well, I guess pumpkin spice is coming back earlier than ever. It's like, I think that the fatigue around that specifically was like, why the fuck am I reporting on this right now?
At this point,
this is
weird because it's like, can it not just be an accepted part of like our seasonal culture?
Yes,
like,
it's here.
Nobody says like, oh no, people are baking Christmas cookies and it's only November. Like, who cares? Eat sugar cookies when you want. Like, pumpkin spice lattes are a slightly newer.
Yeah, but it's like a fall thing. It's like fall. It's definitely like a collaborative fall taste that we have now. And let's just accept it. Let's not make any more news segments on it. It's not news. Okay, it's been around. It's fine. Okay, we like it. Some people don't like it, and that's fine too.
And it's
available.
And the people that want to treat, like, because I definitely, like, there was the craze of pumpkin beer, you had to have it in your bar, and then there was the pushback where it's like, it's lame to have it in your bar. And people that would come in and ask for pumpkin beer, it was like, oh, you want what? Excuse me? Repeat it out loud.
Why are we palate shaming?
Exactly. Like, pumpkin beer is an American tradition. It's one of the American traditions that doesn't hurt other people.
It doesn't hurt as much.
Pumpkin beer is, if you like it, it's great. If not, that's fine. But it's not any different than a lot of fruit and vegetable beers that are just, it's got a history.
Mm-hmm. Well, later today, you're going to be able to check out a video that we made to go with this episode. We're going to be using pumpkin and pumpkin spice in some drinks and some cocktails. So please check that out on our YouTube channel. It's going to be fun. I'm excited.
Should be good.
Should be awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you to Absurdist for our theme music. Thank you to everybody who's joined our Patreon. If you want to be in for our live streams, we're going to be doing 2 live streams this month. Both of those are going to be exclusive to our Patreon. So again, you can join for $1. That will get you access to those live streams. Thank you to everybody who's tweeted about us. You can find our Twitter and Instagram at NeatBoozeCast. Let us know if you've tried any of the products that we've mentioned, or if you have one, if you've tried something that we haven't talked about and you're really excited about it, let us know.
I've been Taylor Smurrow.
And I've been Liz June.
And this has been Neat.